Welcome to the SMA edition of Rare Disease Advisor's Rare Care Podcast, offering unique perspectives from researchers, clinicians, and influencers from the spinal muscular atrophy community.
Hello, this is Larry Luxner, Senior Correspondent for Rare Disease Advisor. We're in Dallas, Texas, talking with Mindy Henderson, Editor-in-Chief of Quest Media, the quarterly magazine, podcast, blog, and e-newsletter of the Muscular Dystrophy Association. Dallas is also the venue for the MDA's 2023 Clinical and Scientific Conference, which attracted 1,300 people in person and another 400 online. Mindy has also lived with type 2 spinal muscular atrophy all her life. Thank you so much for talking with us today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Please, tell us your life story in a nutshell, starting with your SMA diagnosis as a baby.
Yes, happy to. So I was diagnosed with SMA when I was only about 15 months old. There was a lot less known about this condition when I was diagnosed. And, you know, it was a bit of a scavenger hunt to get the diagnosis itself. I was eventually diagnosed by the Mayo Clinic. And, you know, along the way, my parents were told some pretty devastating things. They were told that I would continue to lose all of my ability to stand and walk, that I would lose all of my cognitive function, and they were told that I probably would not live to be three. And, you know, my parents, fortunately, I inherited my stubborn streak from them, and they really decided between the two of them that if that was the way that our story was going to go, they wanted to know that they had done everything that they could for me. And so they started, you know, against, honestly, advice of doctors at the time, this was in 1975, they started to do physical therapy with me. And I started to very slowly and very subtly start to improve and get a little bit stronger. And then I had a third birthday and a few more birthdays since then.
And when did your relationship with the MDA begin?
When I was probably three or four, I would say. When I was about four, you know, my parents had connected with the MDA and found information and resources and a support system in them. And so our family really got to know them, and they asked me to represent them as the Texas State Ambassador when I was only about four.
And you gave a speech at the time.
I did. I gave my first speech when I was four. And, you know, it was an experience that really changed the trajectory of my life. It taught me how to take something that could have been such a negative in my life and really showed me how to do something with it and how to turn it into a positive.
Back then, at that time, as you said, not much was known about SMA, and people generally considered it a terminal disease.
They did.
Right?
It's true.
There were no therapies at all. There was no Spinraza, no Zolgensma, no Risvan, nothing.
Right.
What gave you hope to go on at a time where there was no hope?
You know, I honestly, it was MDA. You know, MDA has been a lifelong partner to me and my family, and now coming to work for them has been really this full circle moment. But knowing who MDA was and the work that they were doing behind the scenes with the researchers to fund all of this research that has been going on and now has materialized in therapies and tangible things that we can get access to, that was what kept me going. It was the research all along.
Now, you went to college and you got a bachelor's degree in mass communications and a master's degree in organizational leadership and ethics. How did you come to be editor-in-chief of Quest?
That was a long, windy road. After I graduated college, I went to work in the high-tech field and worked in high tech for about 20 years, mostly doing work in software implementation, managing teams and working in operations and things. About 4 years ago at this point, maybe a little bit longer, I was actually laid off, which tends to happen in the high tech industry. And I spent about 3 years at that point building a career as a motivational speaker. I wrote a book and then and started my own podcast called The Truth About Things That Suck. MDA approached me and asked me to help them develop their podcast, and it turned into a full-time position running Quest Media for them.
Quest Media consists of a magazine, a blog, a website, and what else?
It's the magazine, the blog, the podcast, and an e-newsletter.
And the magazine is printed. I understand you print something like 100,000 copies every quarter.
Yes, we have a subscription list of about 100,000.
Would that make it among the largest, if not the largest, print magazine dedicated to a rare disease?
It absolutely is. And, you know, there's been an evolution of this platform since I've come to work here. You know, the people that MDA serves, because of the advances in medicine, people are living longer. They're wanting to have different experiences. They're wanting to be more independent. And so it's really evolved to become an adaptive lifestyle platform. And so in addition to covering the science and the research information, we also cover the adaptive lifestyle information and try to give this community as many tools, resources, and information that they need to live those independent lives.
Before we go on to the science, I'd like you to talk a bit about your book.
I would love to. My book is also called The Truth About Things That Suck. And, you know, really, it's a book about our mindset as we travel through difficult things in life. You know, I do talk about my disability and my illness, but it's really not a disability book. There are a lot of other things that I talk about in life that I think so many of us struggle with, things like job loss and shame and rejection and loneliness and all of these things that we all have to deal with in our lives. And, you know, so I tell the stories of how those things have materialized in my own life and really the lens that I've learned to look at them through.
Have you personally faced either bullying or discrimination because of your SMA?
I have, yes. And that's, you know, that's not a fun thing to experience. I was bullied in junior high school, and you know, that's difficult when you're a kid, and you know, when you're in middle school in particular, the kiss of death is being different than anybody else. And so to be bullied for the very thing that makes you different is really challenging. And so that was a difficult time in my life. I've certainly been discriminated against. I've had people underestimate me a lot, and you know, I've even had people go so far as to pat me on the head like a puppy. And so, you know, you get a lot of interesting responses.
Interesting is a polite way to put it. just a question, because we've heard so much lately about bullying and this kind of thing. Obviously, having SMA, you know, using a wheelchair as you do, is not that uncommon. Mm-hmm. How do you get people to understand about the disability and instead of lecturing them, to educate them about what you have and what it's like?
Yeah, you know, it's tricky because, you know, there's people who want to hear it and there's people who don't want to hear it. And so largely it's why I do what I do. And honestly, one of the best things about my job is that I get to come to work every day and figure out what the information is that I need in my own life and what the stories are that I want to hear and dream up what the things are that I can relate to. And so I get to go to work every day and put that information out there. And then I talk about the information that we're publishing. And I hope that people in my community, in my circle, are going and looking at that information and better understanding the world that I live in. I also do a lot of advocacy work. I'm outspoken on social media about my life and the things that you mentioned that I have to deal with in life. And you know, certainly people who are my friends and my family get to know me and see firsthand what the challenges are.
And on that note of challenges, I want to briefly talk before we wrap up about the scientific advances that we've seen in both SMA and possibly soon with Duchenne muscular dystrophy and possibly ataxias and other rare diseases that you deal with on, yes. on an everyday basis. What accounts for this sudden avalanche of FDA approvals of new drugs and particularly gene therapies?
You know, it's such, I love this question, and it's such a pivotal time in genetic medicine. And I think that one of the things that I hear so often is that once there's a breakthrough in one area and they learn something about one disease, so often it can be applied to other diseases. And so it becomes almost this snowball effect where you start to see the learnings and the technologies and things overlap and become more and more applicable to more and more things. And so I personally have been able to receive Spinraza treatments for the last 4 years. And, you know, that's been a life changer for me. It stopped the progression of my condition. I'm 40 something years old. And after that many years, to see something come into existence that can stop the progression of your condition is absolutely incredible. And it's why this particular conference is so important.
If Spinraza had been around 30 years ago, how different would your life be today?
Oh, it would have been completely different. 100%. Yeah, you know, and I mean, I certainly would have been healthier. My disease wouldn't have progressed to the level that it has today. You know, there's even a question about whether or not I would have needed a wheelchair to live my life.
And what about treatments that are still on the horizon that have not been approved yet that might be better than this particular drug that prevent the disease from ever developing in the first place?
Well, absolutely. And there's one out there today for SMA, Zolgensma, that they can give to infants, and they're seeing remarkable results. You know, I hear stories, and I get to hear amazing stories in my line of work, but there are stories of children with the most severe forms of SMA starting kindergarten and not having to rely on wheelchairs and things like that. So it's incredibly exciting, and I think that as things go along and as scientists and clinicians continue to work together like they are here at this conference, you'll start to see things continue to accelerate.
Very briefly, before we wrap up, I do want to ask you about newborn screening for
yes.
SMA. As of today, 48 states, all but Hawaii and Nevada, from what I understand, do screen newborn babies for this condition.
Mm-hmm.
Only two states to go. But yet, that means that every state has to implement it. Just because they're allowed to doesn't mean that they're implementing it. How important do you think it is to get everybody on board?
It is so important. And I cannot say that strongly enough, because like we just talked about, there are treatments available today that would prevent the kind of symptoms that I've experienced in my life. And the earlier you can detect a condition like this and begin to treat it appropriately with the medicines and therapies that are now available to individuals, it's critical. It's absolutely
wonderful. Mindy Henderson, Editor-in-Chief of Quest, thank you so much for speaking with us. This is Larry Luxner for Rare Disease Advisor.
Be sure to follow the latest news, perspectives, and clinical resources on rare diseases at rarediseaseadvisor.com. Thank you for listening.